You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Arms across the Spanish border. The wind whips up the waves aloud. The ghost moon sails among the clouds. Turns the rifles into silver on the border.
Well, that was actually supposed to be a different song tonight.
I remember that song from last week.
Actually, what I had sent over was John Barry's very first, the very first recording of John Barry doing the theme from James Bond.
Oh.
Which
but this
fit.
Worked.
Oh, yeah. It worked last week, too.
I think I heard that. I have it on my
Heck phone. Yeah, it worked.
My dog video.
Awesome.
I used that.
Oh, you never heard that song before, Michael?
But that's okay.
No, it's awesome. Music is music. Love it all.
Well, you know, he did that song on the border in 1977, Al Stewart. It was on the Year of the Cat album, and it was such a great tune. It was just, it's a moving song, and it just, I mean, you know, okay, it fit a little bit, so hey, we're talking about borders tonight anyway, so what the hell.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Doesn't matter.
I'm doing good. Okay, let's get this show on the road. Out West Shop is your online source, and Bobby Jean, you were going to send me a new ad for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, fashion accessories, home decor, and general merchandise. National brands include Rockmount Ranch Mares Wear, Scully Leather Company, and American West Handbags, just to name a few. So shop online at www.outwestshop.com or www.scvoutwest.com. Enter WB100 and receive $10 off your order, toll free. You can call them and you can talk to Bobby Jean at 877-340-9378. And one more we got going on here. It's since 2009, Target Freight has a full truckload service. TFM truckload and LTL service that is the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they work hard to make your full truckload shipping or LTL experience unparalleled using their customized traffic movement program. So call TFM truckload or Target Freight Management LTL today. 844-653-7789. Ask for Mike Matruski for truckload or any of the fine account managers at 888-653-1323 for LTL. Tell them you heard it on the Writer's Block and TFM will have a little something extra for you. Or if you prefer, you can go to www.targetfmi.com. Okay, this is Thursday night. You are listening to LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block. I am Jim Christina in the studio tonight with Mr. Bob Brill.
Hey, I'm here.
There you go. He just chimes right in. Jerry's sitting in here, too, and her microphone is hot.
I'm on.
Bobby Jean Bell is with us on from calling in from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
And, hello.
Hello. And on the line, we have a writer that is, good Lord, this man has been through it all. He's gone through military school, intelligence schools. The guy had more time in a classroom, and I'm sure in the field, than most of us would ever even want to have. He has written a book.
Oh, trust me, it's not an experience you want.
Well, okay. Let me give you a little bit of what has been written about you, Michael. Lieutenant Colonel Michael Brady, USA retired, earned his MS in Strategic Intelligence from the National Intelligence University in Washington, D.C. in 2003. His classified thesis focused on the current and emerging issues confronting China and Taiwan and Taiwan's ability to retain sovereignty into the future. He has performed a wide variety of tactical and strategic intelligence functions, including long-range surveillance, interrogation, and intelligence analysts, analysis, collection management, emergency operations. I'm getting tired just listening to this. And intelligent production. He served as the director, Presidential Emergency Operations Center in the White House from January 2001 until July 2002 under President George W. Bush. You were a 1998 graduate of the Citadel, and that's actually one place I even know about, the Citadel. Actually, I know people who went to the Citadel.
No way.
Way.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, if you go there, it's gorgeous. It looks like a big, huge castle. It's really pretty. Marine Corps Command and General Staff College, Joint Forces Staff College, U.S. Army Airborne School, and oh, my God, Rangers, too. Holy shit, Michael. Is there anything you haven't done?
Oh, it's all nonsense. Come on, man.
You probably can't answer that question, really.
I know, huh?
Yeah, I'd have to kill you if you had.
I'll never tell. Yeah.
Well, he wrote a book called Into the Shadows, and the secondary part of it is called the what?
The Fever.
The Fever, and it is definitely a spy novel. And please welcome to the writer's block, Mr. Michael Brady.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure having you.
You there?
Yeah, we're here. Did you get a chance to listen to any of the shows from the past?
Yeah, I listened to, what's his name, Tim, the guy you had on the other day?
Oh,
Simmons,
okay.
Or Simons?
Simons, oh, yeah. Tom Simons. Yeah,
yeah,
Simmons.
Yeah, he seemed like a really nice guy, great dude. So I think I listened to, I don't know, about 25 minutes or so, 20 minutes, somewhere around there.
Oh, good.
And so, yeah, I mean, you guys are a hoot. You guys are a lot of fun.
Well, we try to be.
Well, I'm glad you listened to that show because it was interesting. Some of the questions I was thinking about, one of the ones I wanted to ask you is sort of a contrast between your writing style and his writing style. And if I may, Jim,
please do.
Right in. A lot of writers, especially when you're writing fiction and you're writing historical fiction, you're very flowery, descriptive, and reading his book, it was like reading a James Cameron shooting script. It's like everything's described down to the buttons. Your book is more, I'm going to say it's more like a news writer would write, because you write direct to the point, very little description, a lot more dialogue. And I was kind of curious about your writing style and what drives that part of you.
Well, I mean, for me, it's all about creating a story and telling a story to the reader. You know, as I got into this project, I mean, this is the first of many books that are coming out. My second one's coming out here in September, and I'm currently cranking out the third one right now. But really, for me, it's about storytelling, and so what I wanted to do when I wrote this first book, you know, I wanted to show the details of intelligence and espionage collection. I wanted it to make it as realistic as possible. In my opinion, a lot of spy novels go a little bit over the top, and they get really slow at times. And so what I try to do is just write enough to keep it a compelling story for the reader and to make it a page turner. And so that's really what I try to do. Now, what I have learned from the first book, because it's my first, fiction novel, is to get into a little bit more on the, you know, developing of the characters. You know, a buddy of mine, one of the initial things he said to me was, "Hey man, great story. I like the way you wrote it. Really flowed well." But, you know, next book, try to get a little bit more backstory on the characters, you know, try to give a little bit more. And so that's something I took to heart. And so, you know, those changes will be made in the second one. But really, I just try to get to the point and keep the reader moving. I mean, that's what I think storytelling is. I think that's what readers want. And again, I was talking to somebody on another radio show a few months ago, and I just said, you know, I wanted to be a little bit different. You know, there's, you know, most of the spy novels are all the same thing, a lot of action, a lot of point of characters, you know, specifically one or two people. But I want it to be different in the regards that I wanted it to be a team effort. Because if you know anything about the intel community, everything we do is joint. It's with other people. You know, there's no single hero that saves the day. And so that's one of the things I try to do in the book. And so by creating a lot of characters within the story, I had to be short to the point to keep it going. And that's what I attempted to do.
Well, there goes my James Bond bubble. You just burst.
The secret agent, man. Well, I also was curious. I don't always keep on top of what's happening in current events and such. So in this story, you do make references to, you give us a little bit of background. And one of the things is you mentioned that President Bill Clinton had authorized a program. This was after this was about sort of the disposal of firearms after the kind of the ending of the Cold War. And I thought that was so interesting. What began to happen with all these, this collection of reserves of firepower. And then I thought, I wonder, did Bill Clinton really do that? Or did you sort of say Bill Clinton did that?
Yeah, look, you know, matter of fact, somebody asked me that too recently. And I got to give you, here's the honest answer. That part of the book was fiction, although there's enough evidence out there, if you look at the internet and do the research, where there are indicators that may have happened. But there's no proof that that program existed. And so it's a really, really small part of the book that I wanted to tie into, you know, obviously with Paul Hernandez and how he helped supply Michael Brennan with some mm-hmm. with some arms that eventually mm-hmm. go to Elif in Turkey and then in Syria. So, yeah, that there's no proof that that happened. I'll just let the research speak for itself if you ever want to dig up anything. It's pretty interesting what you might find. It's not just small arms. You know, we're talking about missile systems and things like that. So I just thought it'd be interesting, a backstory to kind of tie in with how, you know, these CIA guys got their weapons and passed it on to Assad. So
sort of like what happened in Charlie Wilson's War and how military equipment was gathered and then dispersed, so to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the thing. You know, what a lot of people don't realize is we sell weapons to our overseas partners and even sometimes to our adversaries on a routine basis. You know, I wrote an article a few months ago that we had sold several billions of dollars worth of helicopters to the Afghanis. Of course, some of that gets sold to some other countries as well. But, you know, we have an extensive program where, you know, as you all know and your audience knows, we do sell, but we also keep stockpiles of programs where the CIA uses covert.
Right.
Operation. You know, you may know about the CIA program in Syria, where we were arming the rebels for a while. So we do those kinds of things. You know, they like to keep it out of public eye, but it definitely occurs. And so I wanted to make something sound plausible for the reader to kind of keep it going. And so that's why I chose to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to tell you that as we talked the other night, and I told you, I said I loved your book, and I just wasn't sure when I first started reading it, I wasn't sure I was going to be able to really finish it. But then I got into it, and once we started tracking the Ebola, that was it, man. I was gone. But then the only problem I had, and we talked about this the other night, is I needed a program to follow the characters. so many people in there.
No, that's great, Bobby. No, I mean, you know, and I tell you, I love the feedback, you know, and it's really good. I mean, it was just my attempt to do something a little bit different. You know, in retrospect, I could have probably put a little bit less of emphasis on some of these other characters. But again, what I really wanted to do was show how teamwork drives the intelligence process, you know, whether it's collection, counterterrorism. And, you know, to make it realistic, and compelling, you know, I wanted to do it the way it's really done.
Yeah.
And so in order to get, you know, armed equipment to certain parts of the world, or if you're going to do an op with a foreign country like CIA does with Mossad, you have to have a lot of characters in there to show how it really works. And that was the attempt.
Sure.
You know, I took, you know, that's, it's great feedback that you guys mentioned that, because what I did, the second book, involves a joint operation between CIA and SIS, which is British MI6,
right.
and most of the story of the second book takes place in China and in northeastern Afghanistan. And so I consciously reduced the number of characters in that because of the feedback I got. So we'll see how it comes out. I think it's good. A lot of early reviewers said the same thing. So, but yeah, you're right. There were a lot of characters.
Well, I mean, I my suggestion was, you know, when you get the book reprinted, which apparently you're going to because it's a great story, just put just put a list of the characters in the back so we know what the hell we're talking.
Make it like a script. This is this. This is that. You know?
Well, and I appreciated it. I was just going to say that I also appreciated that you gave us the initials for yes. groups and associations and things, but you spelled the whole title out because it was like a whole nother language to me.
Yeah, all of us.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, Bobby. Go ahead.
No, that's all I was going to say.
What I was trying to do with that is I think that my professor side of me came out, you know, because I'm a professor. And you know, one of the things, you know, what I have found and when I did the preparation for the first book, you know, two things came to mind. One is a lot of people, all they know is CIA. A lot of people maybe know NSA and FBI, and nobody knows anything else. And so I think just that side of me of being a professor and just wanting to share and kind of go into the shadows, which is what this series is about. And so I spelled it out for people. You know, it's interesting, though, because we got an audio deal on it right away before it got published. And that was one of the things that the narrator was telling my publisher. It was like, man, there's just too many acronyms here. You know, it's just too much. And so, you know, I think the second, you know, the second reason why I did that is because in my mind, I have, you know, so many books and stories to tell. And so I wanted to kind of lay the groundwork for this first book. I just wanted to lay out, you know, so that if a reader decides to look at the second book and I say JIATF, they'll know, oh, that's Joint Interagency Task Force South, you know. They'll know, like, if I say INR, it'll be the Bureau of Intelligence and Research at the State Department. Mm-hmm. Now, what I did in the second book, you know, is I did not have any acronyms. I just spelled things out. I just wrote it out. And so, you know, because I thought it was a little bit of a distraction. I mean, you know, the audiobooks has been doing really well too, but that was one of the things they said for the next time, you know, try not to put so many acronyms. So what I've done is I've eliminated all of them.
I have to tell you that if I heard the term giatus, I would be thinking that it's something that's growing underneath my ear.
Oh, heck yeah.
At least it's not ginormous.
Something along those lines, yes.
So how much of this book was you?
Yeah, it's funny.
How much of this book was you?
Well, you know what's interesting about JIATF, you know, President Trump, the POTUS, just went out there, you know, recently. And so they got some national press, and JIATF has been unknown for a long time, you know, with their counter-drug mission down in the Keys. It's not going to be like that in future books. But I just wanted to set the stage for the readers as we go through these series of books, and so that's what it is.
So, Michael, how much of this book is actually you?
I don't think he can probably tell you.
I won't tell Jim. I couldn't tell if that was Jim or Bob. But I won't tell. I'll never tell. No, I'm just kidding. No, it wasn't me. You know, I wasn't a CIA career officer. I mean, I was fortunate to be an intel officer for 20 years, and that's all I'm going to say. But no, it's not. It's not me. So.
Oh. Well, I mean, I loved your character, Michael Brennan. Great guy.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I try to portray him as just a normal guy. A normal operative, kind of like a leaf. And so, you know, there was a situation, if you remember, in Sierra Leone when he goes back and battles some of the mercenaries that they hired for the job in
yes.
Sierra Leone. And so, you know, he was confronted with that dilemma, you know. And so he's, you know, I try to portray him as a good guy, you know, not one of these Rambo guys that kills everybody, but that tries to really do the right thing. But the problem is, as you all can imagine, when you're operating in the shadows, and you're in the intel community, you know, for as long as he has been, sometimes you got to get in those gray areas, you know, and sometimes you got to do things, you know, that you may not want to do, or that you might find that you need to do. And so that's what I try to do with Michael. So I'm glad you liked him.
I did.
I hope you liked him just as much. But I appreciate that. It's great feedback.
Well, I love the Mossad agent too that you killed off, you rat bastard.
I know. I want to meet Laura, but I'm also worried about meeting Laura because all you male authors, you know, the love interest never, James Bond included, the love interest never makes it out alive.
No, mine didn't either, huh?
Oh, you're talking about Elise.
Yes.
Well, I'm also talking about Laura because she was at a distance and it was a text relationship, and I'm sure in one of the books we're going to actually meet her, and I almost don't want to because I feel like when we do, she becomes really vulnerable.
I thought
about that. You know, I'll give you a little bit of a spoiler on that one, Bobby. I mean, she is not in book two, but he's probably going to be in book three. That's all I'll say. But yeah, you know, I mean, you know, and that was just something that I threw in there, you know, because I wanted, you know, one of the things I tried hard to do, if you guys have some thoughts on it, you know, I'd definitely love to hear it, but I just try to make him a normal guy. You know, I didn't want him to be the traditional Bond that just looks at a woman like a sex object. I didn't want to have any sex in the book. You know, that's just not, you know, the way I wanted to portray this character. I wanted to portray him as a good guy, a decent guy. You know, Laura came into the book because, you know, the guy's always out. You know, I think that started the book where he was in Yemen.
You're right.
And,
yeah.
You know, so he came back. And so, you know, it's hard to have a relationship with somebody. So what I try to do there, just, you know, and Laura's only in the book, you know, a few sentences, you know, here and there. But what I try to do was just to show how he tries to balance his work in the field and his, you know, his mission with trying to at least have some kind of a relationship with somebody that he just met. So that's what I was trying to do with Laura. So,
right.
Yeah, I may put her in book three or four, but yeah, we'll see. So.
Well, I have to be honest. I thought perhaps you were going to throw a little curveball at the end of this book and have Laura be actually the CIA chick that's doing
I thought maybe she'd end up getting abducted by the bad guys, you know, as countermeasure, well, you know.
Yeah.
Good lead in.
No,
the
that's
book
great.
Too.
I mean, no, that you know what? It's really interesting. I think that was, Jim had just said that. I don't know if it was Jim or Bob, but, you know, it's what's interesting, you just said something very interesting, because that's kind of the effect I wanted the reader to have on Laura. It's kind of, you know, there's a little bit of a mystery there. You know, does she come back? Does she not come back?
Right.
And so I have and I continue to envision in my mind that if I do bring her back, that she will be involved in the agency. Because remember, you know, if you remember from the book, she was going to a conference in New York.
Right.
And she was talking about, you know, data analytics and artificial intelligence and
right.
things like that. And so, you know, I left that open to the reader to kind of interpret however he or she wants to interpret it. And so I may bring her back. I did that on purpose to kind of leave her shrouded in mystery. So, you know, if I feel the need that she needs to come into a book, and I'm already into book three now, I've already got the plot for four and five done, but I may sprinkle her back in, and we'll see a little bit more of her in later books.
Yeah.
So.
Well, at least you didn't kill her off.
No, I can't kill Laura off.
Well, not yet, anyway.
Yeah. No, you know,
Bobby doesn't trust
male
authors.
You try to have a good ending, you know, you try to have a happy ending, and that's just kind of, you know, how I've approached most of my writing. And so I don't plan to kill her off, no way. I mean,
well,
she'll eat her.
And we all still need to find out how the dinner went. Come on, Mike. I mean, you know, you tease us with
the dinner
the whole damn book.
Down, yeah.
So we need to find out.
Was the feedback you got from publishers and some of the editors and stuff, because normally in a spy novel, you are going to have some at least gratuitous sex, if not more than that. Did you get feedback that said they wanted to see more or they wanted to see some sex?
No, actually not. No, I mean, you know, when I sent the final manuscript to the publisher, well, not the final, but the manuscript, they did mention that, you know, and so, you know, they did not talk about that. But again, you know, I don't think it's necessary. You know, I mean, I think, you know, one of the things, again, like I don't want to repeat myself. One of the things I try to do is just be different. You know, I just want to be different and unique, because most of these spy novels, the hero, there's always sex involved. There's always, you know, this, you know, women are these sex objects and they're all beautiful and they're always chasing them. And there are a thousand other writers that do that, you know, and so I wanted to do it differently. But no, I did not get anything. And I did get one of the guys that reviewed my book early on. He asked, you know, his feedback after he read the manuscript was, man, I loved it. It was really cool. I actually learned something too, but where the hell's the sex and the booze and the drinking? I was like, dude, you have this misconception of CIA operatives, because that's not what CIA operatives do. They don't go around chasing women.
That was the pilot. That was Jurgen. No,
yeah.
Not Marcus. The pilot.
Jurgen.
Was
Jurgen?
Kind of the pilot.
Yeah.
That's what he did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Jurgen was our token
Jurgen.
Drunk and spilled the beans. You know?
Yeah,
so,
your
yeah,
token.
He was our token guy. So.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, for the main characters, I mean, you know, you can't be flawed and do this business. You know, you just can't do it.
Right.
You know, you can't go around boozing. You can't go around chasing women. You know, you got to say, you know, intel work, you know, it's been glorified in Hollywood and with a lot of authors, but it's meticulous work. It's careful, you know, work. It's slow work. And so, you know, you're just not doing the kinds of things that people, I mean, I'm not saying most of your audience will think that all of that is true, but it's really quite boring, actually, most of the time.
So that brings up another question regarding Hollywood.
They're just average human beings, you know, trying to collect information. And so,
Mike, I have to ask you, when based on your experience and based on what you see in Hollywood, is there one film out there that's a popular film or over the years that you saw was actually close to what you do and what actually happens?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the movie that I love, that's a great question. My students ask me that, too, sometimes. Body of Lies with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, great movie.
Yeah, Body of Lies. And the reason why that's I like the flick so much is because, you know, the main job of spies, what a lot of people don't realize is that spies don't go out 99.99% of the time. They don't go out and collect the information themselves. They recruit local assets. So when we're overseas, we're in Germany, or if we're in Europe or Russia somewhere, or if we're in India, China, it doesn't matter where we are. You know, what happens is that you're recruiting other people to do your work for you. And that's how this business is done. It's not somebody, you know, picking locks at 2 o'clock in the morning or, you know, breaking into a computer somewhere. I mean, it is recruiting and then, you know, managing those assets and running the assets and communicating and getting the reports from the assets. And then you submit it then into the CIA or whatever agency you're working with. And so Body of Lies, what I loved about the flick was it really showed the relationship between Leonardo DiCaprio and his assets. And, you know, and so that's what I loved about it. So I think that was really, really realistic if you want me to point to one. So great flick.
Yeah, it was a great movie.
Love Leonardo DiCaprio. So
yeah. Go Leo. Well, you dragged us from the Mideast. let me see. Let's see.
Yeah.
If I can remember every place she dragged us through. Syria, yeah. Iraq, into Turkey,
Africa.
Mm-hmm. Jamaica,
Cuba,
and
yep.
Then
Cuba?
Well, a little bit of Cuba, and then
just
to
off the coast,
Brooklyn.
Skirt.
Yeah, Brooklyn's there. Yep.
My God.
Yep.
And poor Michael.
Yeah, you almost retraced it, man. I'm gonna put you guys on the payroll. All three of you guys get on the payroll.
Well, you got to remember, Mike, we do this for a living. Although nobody makes any money at it.
I'm serious. You know, get ready. I'm going to put you on the payroll. That's great. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely you know, that's another thing I try to do with the book. You know, I was talking to you know, somebody else, you know, promoting the book, and I was like, you know, part of what I did was I tried to make it an adventure too. You know. To take people around the world to kind of ask themselves, like, wow, where is this place, you know? And, you know, what do I know about this place? And so, yeah, I mean, book two is not quite as much travel, although China is huge. And so there's a lot of different locations in China. And then, you know, we've got some scenes in Hong Kong and northeastern Afghanistan and Indonesia. But, you know, it's designed to take people around the world and let your imagination run loose. And that's the goal with the reader, you know, let their imagination run wild.
Absolutely.
So,
you know, to
have
see
you
what
been
you
to all these? Have you been to all these places when you write about some of these hotels and places that they eat that overlook these gorgeous vistas and such? Is that partly from firsthand experience?
No, most of it is not. I mean, I've been in some of those locations, but what I did was, you know, I was at a convention the other day. I was a panelist, and somebody was asking about that. And you know how I do my research now. I use technology. I use Google Earth.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, so what I do is, you know, I mean, I'm certainly not hanging out in Syria, you know, for the last years, you know. And so, you know, I hope it came across that way, and I hope you and readers appreciate the research, but I put a lot of research into this book. I really did, and I want it to be authentic. And so, you know, if I'm going to talk about, you know, that scene where Harris is trying to flee Islamic State, and he gets to Jeroboulos, and, mm-hmm. you know, he's on the verge of crossing the border, you know, I mean, how else am I going to know how to write the scene, you know, in terms of direction, the trails, which way the trails, do they run north, do they run south, you know, where is the small village in relation to him? And so what I did was, is, I mean, it took me a while to write just that scene, but I'll just go on Google Earth, I'll zoom down, and I'll say, okay, if I want this scene to pan out where I've got at least one sniper, I need to find a location that's about a click, maybe a click and a half if I really want to go crazy. And is there enough open space here where it makes sense, you know? And so that's what I do. And so what I did, you know, like specifically with the hotels and the airports and things like that, well, particularly with the hotels, again, I wanted to bring the reader the story to life. I want them to feel it, you know, to know what that hotel looks like. Maybe throw in a sentence or two of the cuisine. And so that's all research, Bobby. Most of that is just my research and exhaustive, researching, you know, those locations and those locales.
Gotcha.
Google Earth is a great tool, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Google Earth is wonderful.
It's very cool. You know, I recommend all authors you use it. You know, I mean, there's still a lot of authors that don't. I'm not sure why.
I don't either.
But, you know, it's, I mean, if you want to set a scene in a location you've never been in, no Western authors will have been to Syria in the last 2 years, you know, unless
they're that's true.
A journalist, you know,
that's
or something.
True.
And,
that's true.
And so if you're going to take the reader and make it realistic, and things are actual, you know, that's the thing too. It's like, I was talking to somebody about that as well. It's like, you know, when I say it's a 2-click journey or it's a 5-click journey or kilometers, I'm sorry, journey, I've done the research on the map. You know, I've scaled it out. Okay, is this really 5 clicks or is this 4 clicks? And Google Earth is really powerful. You know, I mean, it's not like I've got a massive budget to go travel and do the research for these books.
Right, right.
And so, you know, I recommend any author do it. It's a fantastic, powerful tool.
Hey, let me
It helps us new guys out.
Let me cut you here. I got to do a real quick commercial, and we'll come right back to you. So don't go away.
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah. Imagine deep blue skies, majestic mountains, and acres of lush green orange trees in a tranquil country setting. Sound like a perfect vacation spot? It is. For your dog. That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Whether you are going away for a one- or two-night getaway or an extended vacation, All Dogs Rule is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. When your dogs return home, you'll have to ask whose vacation was better. Well, Jerry, we know whose vacation was better.
Bella's.
Check out their website at alldogsrule.com or give them a call at 805-524-1100. Your dog will thank you. Well, of course, Russ and Karen will thank you as well.
They absolutely will.
Of course, if it's my dog, it's what?
Yeah, and Russ will be here, of course, next week with us. So that's alldogsrule, 524-1100. And thanks for your patience. Okay. We are back. It is now 7:32 p.m. on the time clock on our wall. We are with author Michael Brady in the studio with Bob Brill and Jerry Christina, and Bobby Jean Bell is on the phone. And we were talking about Michael's book. And now let's get a little bit into your process, because we have to Henry Park, our roving reporter, will be calling in at 7:40. So we need to move you along a little bit, Michael. You're, of course, as always, you are more than welcome to hang tough and talk to Henry if you'd like.
Absolutely.
Okay, then. When do you find time to write? You are a professor at the Citadel. You have all these things going on in your life, children and wife and probably more than one dog. When do you find time to write?
No more dogs, cats.
Ah, oh my God, really?
Oh my God! Don't get me started, man. I mean, I have to be honest. I mean, I'm a softie. I love the cats now, but it took me a while to get used to them. Holy mackerel!
Okay,
yeah, I know that one.
Anyway, when do you find time to write? I mean, what's your process like when you sit down? At what time of the day and Do you have a word count that you try to make it through every day, or do you just write as catch can?
Well, I've become more disciplined now. When I wrote the first book, I was fortunate enough to have the summer off, and so I wasn't teaching any classes. And so, you know, I spent obviously the summer there writing that. And then the editing and the writing a book too. What I did was, after the first book came out, what I've done for the second book is I try to write every day.
Uh-huh.
And I'd be BSing, you know, I'd be BSing you if I told you I write every single day.
Sure.
But I really try to do it. You know, I try to at least, sometimes I'll shoot for a word count depending on where I am in the cycle. So like, for example, yesterday, you know, I had some things come up personal. So I hadn't written in a day or two, well, about a day and a half, 2 days, call it 2 days. So I said, I got to write at least 1,000 today. And so I sat my butt down, and wrote 1,000. But typically what I do is I'll write, in the evenings, you know, after I've done any research I need to do for my classes or preparation for my lectures or anything else like that. I'll try to write a little bit either on a Saturday or a Sunday, but not as much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm finding is that I write at night, typically, I don't know, 7-ish, 8-ish till about 9 or 10 is when I try to do that. So it's worked for me, and so that's how I do it.
Okay. That's good. That's good process.
Yeah. When you set up your computer to write, and a lot of people do it in different ways, do you sit and write it in Word? Do you sit and write it in another program? How do you write it?
I write it in Word. And so, you know, my publisher wants it, I think, in Times New Roman 12 font. And so, you know, that's what I use. I use Microsoft Word. And then when the editors get their cut, you know, they'll, when it goes to print, it'll go into a PDF file. But I use Word. Mm-hmm. That's all I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Times New Roman is the easiest type to read.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. the easiest one to recognize. It's the easiest one to read and doesn't give people headaches.
Yep.
Yeah.
And everybody says.
Except maybe for chapter headaches.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Everybody says Times New Roman 12. That's what everybody writes.
Yeah, I think I got scolded on the first one because when I sent the initial manuscript, I was like, you know, they were like, I forget what the hell I used. I used Calibri or something like that. But you know, one of the editors, they sent me back saying, "Can we Times New Roman 12? You know, can we? You know," and so we had to do that. But other than that, it's all in their hands. You know, I give it to them, and
sure,
and then they do their magic and convert it to PDF, and then off it goes to print and. And then we have a book. So, but yeah, I use Word, and that's all I ever use now.
Gotcha.
Now your publisher is Waldorf Publishing. Can I just ask how did you find them, or how did they find you?
Yeah, absolutely. When I decided to write the book, I'm the type of guy that says the hell with it. I'm going to go big, you know, or go home, you know. And so what I did was I said, you know what, I'm going to try to get an agent. So to make a long story short, I reached out to a couple of big agent houses in New York City. I think one of them was Triton Media. I mean, these are people that represent major authors. And a friend of mine asked me, why the hell are you doing that? And I'm like, well, you know, if I'm going to go into this, I'm going to go into this 110%. I'm going to try. So I actually got responses back from the first four or five agents that I got. But what they said was just not interested in the project at this time. You know, they were nice, but. The fact that I heard from him was a decent sign. So after I think the fifth or the sixth one, I reached out, and I can't remember exactly how I heard of Waldorf. They're out of Dallas, Texas. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was a social media posting or somebody, but I heard of Waldorf, and so I reached out, and they called me the next day, and they liked the first 10 pages of the manuscript, and they said they would send me a contract right away. And so that's the story. So I didn't have an agent at the time. Mm-hmm. I still don't. But that's how I got in touch with Waldorf.
Did the fact that you were a college professor and had that going for you, did that intrigue them at all?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, one of the things she said, you know, one of the interesting things she said to me, I said this at a panel recently, was she said, you know, we like your book. The editors looked at the first 10 pages or whatever the hell it is I gave them. But I think it was 10 pages. And they said, but look, I'm selling you. I'm selling your background, you know. There's a lot of people that write spy fiction. There's a lot of people that write fiction books, obviously. But, yeah, she did say that she was going to, you know, I don't know, take advantage of what I've done in the past. And so I think certainly my past and what I was able to do and accomplish certainly led to that contract. And so I think it made a big difference. And they did say that, she, you know, because I was like, wow, I can't believe you guys are giving me this opportunity. And she goes, well, I'm really not selling the story. I'm selling you. And that was really interesting. Right. And so that's how that came to be.
Huh. Can I ask a question? Yeah. Michael, this is Jerry. I'm the bookie.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
She's giving you 40-1 odds.
Yeah. Listen, from the time you turned your manuscript in to the time your book was published, how long did that take?
Oh, boy, let me think real quick. I think I finished the book in early August. I got my first set of changes back in November. When it was done, it was February. And so we thought that it was February. Yeah, I think it was early February. And then what ended up happening was, the book was actually called Black River, Into the Shadows, Black River. But when we were up in New York,
I have to take a call. So hey, Tuff, just keep that thought. Don't go away. I have to take a call here.
Okay, absolutely. Yep, absolutely.
This will be Mr. Henry Park.
You understand Morse code, right?
Roving reporter.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea. Let's go to print.
Hey, Henry. Henry, hang tough for just a second. Michael's finishing his story.
Of course.
No, I was going to say, I think you know, by the time we got everything done, it was February, because there were three rounds of edits. And then there was actually one more where they changed the cover of the book and obviously the subtitle. So it was a long process. I mean, I think it took, I guess if you go from August until around one more change in April, what is that, about 6-7 months, something like that?
Yeah. Actually, that's not bad.
And then it published. It became available in September, I think.
Yeah, September last
year. It came out in September. So, and we're going through the same process now. I mean, the book two is all done now, but, you know, I think I finished this one a little bit later. I think this one I finished up in, I don't want to lie to you. Maybe mid-October or something like that. Don't get me lying to you. But I think it was mid-October. And so same thing happened. Went through several rounds of edits. But this time I think we finished up in February. So the turnaround was a little bit shorter. But, you know, I learned a lot from the first process. You know, one of the errors I made as a new author was I thought I give a manuscript and let the editors make all the changes and corrections and things like that. And why was I wrong about that? You know, they highlight, you know, what was wrong. But, you know, I still had to make a lot of the changes.
Absolutely.
Where they were, you know, where they recommended changes, you know, we had to negotiate. You know, I was like, well, look, I really want to use this word. But, you know, I really, you know, so I took more effort when I submitted book two for the editors. So I made a lot of changes that I learned from book one. So I think that's what helped expedite this process for book two. So I think my writing has gotten a little bit better, you know, learning where all the periods and the commas go, just stuff like that. And, and the other thing that I did, you know, I think I was just so elated, enjoyed and honored by the fact that I got published that, you know, when I did the first book, I didn't really go back and reread some things. Because, you know, when you're writing at 2 o'clock in the morning and you got a lecture at 8 a.m, you all are writers, you know, you all have written many books, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. And so I took a little bit more pride in that standpoint of not turning in the sloppy mess that I did for the first one. So, hopefully that answers your question.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
So say hello to Henry Park. Henry, are you? I know you're still with us. We can barely hear you, Henry. What phone are you on?
I don't know. One of the phones of the house.
Okay. Well, this is Michael Brady is with us, and Henry is our roving reporter. He goes Henry's Western Roundup and Blogspot.com.
Hey, Henry, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
Oh, I was telling them a little while ago, I'm sleepy. I got to be honest, man. It's 10:45 here on the East Coast, and this is way past my bedtime, man.
Okay. Well, Michael, don't go away when Henry's done.
You know the only thing that matters is the West Coast, don't you?
Well, yeah. The left coast.
Oh, man, I missed the West Coast. I want to get back out there. I think the last time I was out there was in 07. I think I was out in San Diego. That's the last time I've been there.
That's 11 years.
I used to live there many, many years ago.
Yeah.
We have cell phones now.
Come back and see what we've ruined since then.
Yeah, which is pretty much everything. So Henry, what's going on?
California's beautiful.
It is.
Obvious question I've got to start with is, what did you folks think of the premiere episode of Yellowstone on Netflix last night?
Good question. Jerry?
I liked it, Henry. I loved Kevin Costner, obviously. I just was hoping it was not going to be like another Dallas. The only thing I didn't like was the daughter. I thought that was a little cheesy. I didn't like that. But otherwise, it was great.
Too many plots out there.
I have to be honest, the fact that I've been dying, waiting for this, because I have a friend that is actually works on the project, and I've been waiting and waiting and waiting, and I got home last night and I fell asleep. So I haven't watched it yet, Henry.
What did you think, Henry?
I liked it. Don't know that I love it yet. The first episode of something like this is tough because they've got to establish all the characters
and
all the plots. So I thought it took a little while to get going. When it got going, I thought it was really quite good, and I'm really looking forward to next week's.
Yeah.
I will say this. I posted just a question on Facebook. What did you think of it? And I was surprised at how much negative reaction I got to the language. A lot of people were bothered by all the F words.
Really?
And, that and complaints that it seemed like ideas borrowed from Longmire.
Oh, you know what? I was thinking the same thing when I was watching it. But I had a problem watching 2 hours of it. I think it should have just been an hour.
Is the pilot just the 2 hours?
Yes, 2 hours.
Yeah. So the regular series.
Yeah, the pilot's 2 hours. The regular episodes are going to be one. Yeah.
Right. And I think there's only 10 episodes.
That's right.
So,
but it's going to be a series, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But it's a limited series, just 10 episodes.
Costner's too busy to do a whole lot of stuff.
That's true. Yeah, he's got another miniseries coming in November.
Right.
In the new roundup, I'm going to be reviewing a new contemporary Western, a humorous thing called The Escape of Prisoner 614. It's about a pair of slacker deputies in rural upstate New York. I know it doesn't sound like the West, but you have to see it. They're fired by their boss, Ron Perlman, who is very funny, very good in this. And when they find out a prisoner's escaped, they figure maybe they can get their jobs back if they can bring him in. I wrote a Father's Day piece about Fess Parker for the INSP channel. You can check that out on their blog. That came out nicely. The July issue of True West is out, featuring my article on the story behind the making of Dead Men, a 3-hour Western that took 6 years to complete, but is definitely worth the wait. On a sad note, producer Kent McRae passed away earlier this month at age 89. He started as a production manager on early live TV, moved on to Bonanza and High Chaparral, then he partnered with Little Joe, Michael Landon, co-producing Little House on the Prairie, Highway to Heaven, and a lot of other shows.
Gotcha.
I did an extensive interview with him for the roundup, but I've only published like the first fourth of it so far. Frankly, I had technical problems, so transcribing is taking the rest of my life, apparently.
Well.
At the Autry, this Saturday at noon, there's a double bill of Gene's own movies, The Big Show from 36, and Twilight on the Rio Grande from 47. Mm. In The Big Show, Gene is backed by the Sons of the Pioneers, whose lead singer is Leonard Sly, who later changed
Roy Rogers.
Roy!
That's the guy. Very good. And you can learn all about this and more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Thanks, Henry.
Cool.
Thanks, Henry.
My pleasure.
And we'll talk soon.
You bet. Happy trails.
Happy trails.
Bye, Henry.
So, Michael, let me ask you the question.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. We talked about this briefly the other night, and I loved your answer when I said, do you ever have writer's block? And your response to me was, do you remember what you said?
I don't. Refresh my memory.
You said, I got it right now.
He still does. He couldn't remember your question.
I think sometimes, I guess it depends on how we define writer's block, but I think I know what I want to write. You know, sometimes it's hard, getting the words out where, I was struggling with a scene the other day. I was telling my girlfriend here in Florida, I was like, man, I just can't get this damn paragraph written the way I want it. Sometimes I got to walk away, but I think though, from the traditional definition of writer's block, I know what I want to do. I know how the story is going to progress. But you know, I guess I deal with it sometimes because you know we want to try to write the best scene or the best story that we can. So.
Okay, that works. Two things. Number one, you were going to send me your address.
Yes, I think it was Jim Christina at Yahoo. Yes,
that is correct.
Yes, I got you, sir.
Okay, and secondly is where can we find your novel?
Oh, you can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. It's at a bunch of other bookstores, Chicago, Powell's in Chicago. It's in a bunch of stores. Well, here in the United States, it's mostly all the big stores, you know, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Target, Amazon, Walmart, and then a bunch of independent retailers that are out there, too. So
right.
In most places, people can find it if it's not stocked, which it probably isn't. You know, I didn't get a 50,000 distribution run, the initial run. So, you know, they can just ask for it, but, you know, they can find it at any bookstore.
Okay, and your email and website address is?
Yeah, my email is michaelbrady@michaelbradybooks.com.
Okay.
I'd love any feedback from your audience. And then the website is www.michaelbradybooks.com. That's michaelbradybooks.com.
Very cool. Hey, thanks for joining us tonight, Michael. It's been a hoot having you.
Hey, this has been a great time. It's been my privilege and honor. Thank you so much for having me.
It was wonderful, and we love the book. So just keep writing.
And if you want to be booked for next year, contact me in September.
There you go.
Absolutely. I'll make sure all of you guys get a copy. So I'll send you guys copies.
Perfect. Perfect. And there's your invite for next year. So
thank you so much.
Okay, Michael. Take care, my friend.
You got it, Mike.
Y'all be safe and enjoy that weather out there.
You betcha. We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Michael Brady in his book is Out of the Shadows, The Fever. An excellent book. Excellent, excellent book.
And if you know anything about Ebola and you get into this book, it's very fascinating.
It is
indeed.
I know,
we didn't really talk about that. That's a scary scenario.
Well,
is that the disease,
yeah.
Ebola?
Ebola.
Uh-huh. Oh, no, I can't do that because I'll have it and I'll have to look
it
up.
Yeah, I know. Jerry will get it. And then
it's a scarier scenario than any.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be another midnight trip to the emergency room.
Thing you could think of, yeah.
It's even worse than a dirty bomb.
Oh, God.
Or a dirty book.
Or a dirty but he didn't have any sex in this book.
Well, you didn't have any in yours either. Wait a second.
Here,
you allude.
Yeah.
You alluded to it. I will give you that. Santa Fe will never be the same. Well, next week on our Writer Block show, our guest will be Bob Brill.
Hey, thank you.
Who is he again?
He's Bob Brill. He's some guy who writes cheesy westerns.
Are you going to be in studio, Bob?
I will.
Yeah, he'll be in studio. He'll be actually sitting in your chair. You'll be sitting in your chair.
Oh, I have to switch chairs?
Oh, yeah. Well, Russ is here. He's the co-host next week.
Okay, good.
So Russ, of course, will have the co-host chair, and you'll be sitting over in the guest chair.
I love that.
And you know you have to bring the drinks and hors d'oeuvres, right?
I will.
Yes,
tequila.
Oh my God!
What do you want for hors d'oeuvres?
Oh my God, Jerry, or not Jerry, Bobby, you didn't have any of that tequila. Oh, it was so good.
I'll bring some.
I don't get those perks anymore.
Well, it was at the Cowboy Festival. He was pouring it freely.
Yes, I remember seeing things about that posted on Facebook. It all happened on Sunday. I don't know.
Sunday morning
early. I was
early.
Only going to be there Saturday. You planned all the fun stuff for Sunday.
Yeah. Just before Johnny Boggs wasn't frickin' Stephen King.
Yes, right.
Okay, well, we're going to have to get out of here. We're running late. Bobby, thanks so much. And, of course, you'll be joining us next week.
I will.
When our featured writer will be Bob Brill.
Right.
Yay.
And we thank writer Michael Brady for joining us. And Jerry, of course, thank you so much. Bob?
Yes, sir.
Well, you're going to be in the chair next week.
I will be here.
And with that being said, we have killed another Thursday for Bob Brill, Jerry, Bobby Jean Bell, and myself, Jim Christina. It is another evening gone by, and we are out of here.